All right, good morning. Today, the Paducah Chamber brings to you an opportunity to hear the views of our State House and Senate candidates on issues of importance to our business community. This morning, we'll move right into the proceedings by asking our state representative candidates, Republican candidate Randy Bridges and incumbent State Representative Gerald Watkins, to take their places at the podiums. Before we begin, I'd like to just do a quick review of the format and the guidelines. We'll start with opening statements by our candidates, followed by the moderator's question. And then our next segment will be questions from our media panel, and we will conclude with the candidates' closing statements. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond. Candidates will be given a 10-second warning indicated by the amber lights to conclude their responses. They're the amber lights candidates. The red lights will indicate that you must stop. If you go beyond your allotted time of that 1 minute, I will interrupt you. Are there any questions? If not, we'll begin with your opening statements, which will be given in alphabetical order by last name, with Mr. Bridges speaking first. Remember, you have 1 minute for your remarks. Mr. Bridges.
Thank you, Todd. And I want to thank the chamber and all the board members and everyone here, especially Paducah Bank, for sponsoring this event. I'm honored for the opportunity to stand before you and tell you who I am. I'm a husband of 34 years. I'm a father with two children, two grandchildren, and one grandchild on the way. I'm an employer. I'm a local real estate broker, and I'm a small business owner. I understand what it takes to create jobs. I understand what it takes to balance a budget, and I understand what it takes to control spending. Unfortunately, our leadership in Frankfort does not understand that, and that's one of the very foundational reasons why I'm here before you today. I'm not a politician. I'm a businessman, and I think it's time that we apply our basic business principles to those in Frankfort and get our budget under control. We have been left with $1.4 billion in debt. I just want you to think about that as we talk about what goes on today. Thank you.
Mr. Bridges, thank you. And now, Mr. Watkins, again, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Chamber of Commerce. I appreciate you being here. I'm honored to be with you. I've been an active member of the Paducah Area Chamber of Commerce for 26 years. I've flown to Washington, D.C. with the chamber on six different occasions, fighting for our community to try to improve the quality of life, job opportunities, educational opportunities for people in Paducah, McCracken County, and Western Kentucky. I have a great relationship with both parties in both chambers and our governor from Western Kentucky. I've had four bills passed in my first term in Frankfort. Two I carried for the National Rifle Association, which gave me an A-plus rating and endorsed me in this campaign for re-election, and one for the Kentucky Sheriff's Association. Some of the other bills I introduced, would get people out of prison who don't need to be there and save approximately $312 million a year in the state budget that we could use for infrastructure repair, economic development, a tax cut, or further shore up our pension payments. And then also the three strikes and you're out, which would require repeat violent offenders to stay in prison for life. Thank you.
Mr. Watkins, thank you. Our next segment will be the candidates' responses to the following question that was given to them prior to this morning's forum. The question: for the last several years, money from the Commonwealth and the federal government for local projects has been dwindling. The Paducah Chamber has endorsed a proposal by Lift Kentucky on the local option sales tax. More than 37 states allow local governments to levy such a tax, but Kentucky does not. The proposal could help fund specific economic development and quality of life initiatives in Paducah and McCracken County should the citizens approve such projects by direct ballot. Are you in favor of allowing a statewide ballot on the issue to give voters the opportunity to decide if they want to have this tool available to citizens in local communities across the Commonwealth? Please state your reason or reasons for your response. And responding first is Gerald Watkins, who won the coin toss prior to our program beginning. Remember, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. While I favor keeping taxes low, at the same time, I would be supportive, yes, of allowing the voters of Kentucky in a state referendum to decide for themselves whether they want to pass the local option sales tax. A specific project for a specific period of time would have to be, again, approved by the people in the local community that wanted to approve it for whatever the project might be to add an extra penny for that time frame. I think Elizabethtown is a prime example. If you take a look at their sports complex. It's an incredible complex. It's an economic engine that helps drive Elizabethtown's economy. It's one of the reasons Elizabethtown's one of the fastest growing cities in Kentucky. And so I think with for projects of that magnitude, and if you look in Paducah, we've got over 1,000 kids who play soccer a year, approximately 2,000 who play softball and baseball, and those kids are playing soccer literally on a dump, and I think we can do better for our kids.
Randy Bridges, you will have 1 minute to respond.
I would support that option, and what's so encouraging about that is I'm a proponent of smaller government. Anything we can put into voters' hands is what I'm about, and I think that's what we need to do. The local option sales tax should have some limits. It should start at a specific time. It should have a definite ending for a specific purpose. I think it needs to piggyback upon the current paperwork of this current sales tax, so there's no undue burden on the businesses that are responsible for collecting this and distributing this, so that we can do it as easy as possible. And I want people to understand that this is something that we only approve the ability to do it. This is not a tax increase by the state level. It's allowing the cities to have a choice. And then at that point, it'll go to their council members, decide if it goes on the ballot. And then at that point, it will go to the voters, and it'll be the citizens. And I'm all about giving the citizens more rights. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Bridges, thank you. The next segment will be questions directed to the candidates by members of our media panel. The responding candidate will have 1 minute for his answer. Each panelist will ask only one question during his or her allotted time. You will have 30 seconds for your question and a 10-second warning to conclude, panelists. And questions by the media panel will be alphabetically by last name, and then we'll rotate appropriately. We will begin with Mr. Lampe of WKMS, and would you please direct your first question to Gerald Watkins, who won the coin toss prior to the breakfast.
Mr. Watkins, our regional poverty rate is pushing toward 20% in McCracken County alone, and childhood poverty rates are near 30% according to data from the USDA. What legislative tools would you employ to impact the poverty rate in your district?
Thank you for that question. I was appointed and served on the Poverty Task Force for Paducah and McCracken County. We were tasked with finding ways to give people an education, which is the key. My dad had a sixth grade, my mom an eighth grade education. I grew up in poverty. I know what it's like, but I know the value of an education. And that's the great equalizer. And to that effect, I've voted to fund, and I'm serve on the board of the Community Scholarship Board, which provides, with minimal requirements, a free 2 years of college at WKCTC, and we have 284 students who are taking advantage of that this fall that probably would not have had a chance to go to college without that. I also was very instrumental in my compromise. I know a lot of people worked hard, but my compromise and leadership helped land the 2+2 with Murray State University to finally give, along with the UK Engineering School, a four-year university presence in Paducah. I think this is the greatest thing to happen to Paducah and McCracken County in the last 50 years, and it's going to change people's lives, and it's going to lift people out of poverty.
Mr. Bridges.
My wife's a school teacher at one of the lowest income elementary schools here in the county, and I know what poverty is. I had an outhouse till I was 3.5 years old. I remember going into it here in Paducah, McCracken County. So I did not grow up with a silver spoon, and I understand the conditions, but I also understand that this is America and you can lift yourself out of it. And I think education is a very important part of that. While I do believe we need major education reformation to address that. The other thing is, I'm all about helping those in need, but I think we need some major, take a major look at some of the loopholes in which money's being taken out of other areas, and that's stuff we could use to help grow the economy and it help lift these people out of poverty. There's a great need, as Mr. Watkins said. I'm a member of the Rotary Club. I'm a Paul Harris Fellow, and the Rotary Club was instrumental in placing the 2-year free scholarship program at the local colleges for all the high school seniors that qualify. Thank you.
Mr. Bridges, thank you. We'll move now to Greg Dunker, who will address his first question to Mr. Bridges.
Mr. Bridges, there's a push in some sectors to raise the minimum wage. Would you see a minimum wage increase as a paycheck booster or a job eliminator?
I would have to say, as a small business owner, I used to own convenience stores. I had a start off with 6 employees, ended up with 120. And I can tell you, I went back and looked at my actual numbers when I owned those. And if we took what they're calling for, close to a 30-35% increase in the minimum wage, That's not just a $3.10 an hour increase. That's about a $5 an hour increase when you look at it. And it's like raising a ladder. If you take a box and raise it a foot, you put that ladder on it, it raises every other rung too. So it is going to force businesses, small and large, to have to raise their whole pay scale. And it is going to be add to inflation. It is not the feasible thing to do. So I just tell you, I'm not in agreement with that. Thank you.
Mr. Watkins?
Thank you. I voted for an increase in the minimum wage in Frankfort that would take it from $7.25 an hour to $10.10 an hour over 3 years. It has not been increased in 5 years. 22 states have a higher minimum wage than the federal minimum wage that Kentucky still has. One study showed that 13 states that increased the minimum wage grew faster than the states that did not. University of California study showed no negative impact on unemployment by an increase in the minimum wage, a modest increase. For those on minimum wage, a 2012 study showed that 60,000 people in Kentucky, 60,000 workers, work for the minimum wage or less, of which 70% are women, over 50% are over age 22, and 33% work full time. So we're not talking about high school and college students per se. We're talking about a big segment of the economy that are trying to struggle and work that have to work 2 and 3 jobs without benefits. And I think it's time to raise the minimum wage for them.
Time. Moving now to Lauren Duncan with the Paducah Sun. And please direct your next question to Mr. Watkins.
Mr. Watkins, Kentucky's death penalty law has been under a court-ordered stay since 2010, which means executions cannot be performed in Kentucky. Bills were introduced in both the House and Senate this year that proposed abolishing Kentucky's death penalty. Do you support the abolishment of the death penalty in Kentucky?
No, I do not. I'm a strong proponent. I introduced 14 bills. Most of them are in the area of crime and punishment. I would like to completely revise the Kentucky Criminal Code, get those people out of prison, 14,000 of them who don't need to be there, who are in there on personal possession of drug charges. There ought to be community service and mandatory treatment with a faith-based community being a part of that sentencing. And my three strikes and you're out. Independent conviction of a Class A or a Class B felony. It's life in prison, no probation, no parole. Most people who murder have a track record before they get there. My next door neighbor in the neighborhood I grew up in is still in prison for murdering three of our neighbors, one right next door on the other side. And the neighborhood I grew up in, my mindset, I think it is a deterrent. People talk about the cost. I called the warden at Edible. It cost, I think, less than $10 to execute someone. I've sat in the electric chair many times. And I think it's justice. The prison, I wouldn't want my mail delivered there, but it's not a bad life. And I don't think that's punishment enough for people who do some of the heinous crimes
Time.
They commit.
Mr. Bridges.
I would support that. When you perform a heinous crime, you ought to have a heinous punishment. You know, right now, I think our leadership's getting lax on punishment, and they want to add and change the laws. I think we need to enforce the laws we already have. There's a penalty, there's a reason for that, and if we go lax, we start decriminalizing certain elements in our judicial system. There's no penalty to that, and that's what we need. We need to stand behind the laws and support. We've got the law enforcement out there working hard every day. We're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars and many man hours to put these people behind bars. But right now, the current legislators want to clean out the prisons. I don't think we need to clean out the prisons. We need to turn them into prisons and quit making them country clubs and make the people serve their time that they're due there. I know it costs money, but there's certain things that we owe our citizens and the privacy and the safety that they need. Thank you.
Moving now to Robert Bradfield, WPSD Local 6. And Robert, you'll address your first question to Mr. Bridges.
Good morning. Recently, the Chamber and Paducah City leaders have called on Paducah Power to find solutions to its soaring power rates. Although the mayor does appoint board members, the city does not have any direct managerial oversight to the day-to-day operations of Paducah Power. What kind of involvement, if any, should the city and state have with any of Paducah Power's future decisions, and would you support legislation ensuring such measures?
Correct, Mr. Bridges.
I'm sorry. I would support measures for that. You know, we don't have a crystal ball, and I do want to look at Paducah Power and understand that they, at the time, I'm sure they were certain that they were thinking, they were making the decision they thought was in the best interest. But on the state level, there's certain things that need to be done. One, we've got a nuclear plant out here, that there's a nuclear moratorium, and the current leadership has placed that moratorium on it. It needs to be lifted. And I think 2 years ago on this stage, there was a commitment to work to lift that, and it's not been done. That's been a failure. We need to look at the EPA environmental regulations on coal, and not just on coal, but on our water systems, our dams, and the electrical generators there. You know, we have got Kentucky, not only Paducah, McCracken County, but Kentucky as a whole is under an energy crisis, and it's been brought on by our president and by our current leadership, and it needs to be addressed. And I think we need to step in and address some of these issues. Thank you.
Mr. Watkins, your response?
Thank you. Yes, I think it's a crying shame. We're trying to compete, and our power rates are going sky high. That was a terrible decision to leave TVA and move in with take part in Prairie State. At this point, something needs to be done. I think the mayor and the city commission are taking very positive steps to move in the direction of trying to clean that up. And legal people are looking at, staff are looking at it to see if there's any way to get out of that contract. And so I fully support those moves. And I think we need to nationally, energy will drive our economy and create jobs and move us to the forefront of economic development and leadership worldwide. If we would just do that, and we need to slash the EPA's budget, and I signed on to a letter criticizing the president, mailed to him for his onerous, these EPA regulations that are destroying our coal industry, particularly in eastern Kentucky, but it's going to move west. I support development of the Keystone XL pipeline, drilling oil in Alaska. We need to become energy independent.
Time, Mr. Watkins, time. With time remaining in our media panel segment, we'll rotate back to Chad Lampe. And Chad, go ahead and direct your question to Mr. Watkins.
Mr. Watkins, Kentucky, despite previous legislative efforts, still has one of the worst unfunded pension liabilities in the country. What solutions would you bring to the table to solve the problem that threatens the financial stability of many Kentuckians on the cusp of retirement?
It is an issue of great concern. The General Assembly a few years ago, passed some legislation to try to address that, in that you have to be older to retire for state employees, you have to work longer, you have to make a higher contribution to your pension, and you count the five highest years rather than the three highest years. All those have the effect of lowering those pension obligations. In the General Assembly, I voted for it. We voted $207 million over the next biennium to fully fund the ARC for our pension payments, public pension payments, and we're going to continue, so we're good in that area. We have a balanced budget. Constitutionally, we have to. The governor's cut $1.6 billion from spending since he's been governor. Our state employee level is at its lowest point in 40 years. So we are doing, I think, responsible things to try to get that under control, and the ARC is fully funded.
Mr. Bridges, your response?
I have to disagree with my opponent. They're not doing everything possible, and they haven't for several years. This is the first year that they said they fully funded it, and that's not true. They put the $100 million initial amount that needed to be put in there, but we're several billion dollars in debt. A few years ago, 10, 12 years ago, we had the top pension fund in the nation. Now we have one of the worst. We need to go back. I think Senate Bill 2 was a good start with mandated funding. We need to address the defined benefits program. The current system we've got is not feasible and it's not sustainable. We need to put retirement systems that are sustainable in place, and what we have right now is not. We need to quarantine those funds and not let them raid those funds to put in a general fund for anything else. And that's one of the major problems we've got too with the outrageous spending that our governor's taking a hold. So,
Mr. Bridges, thank you. Now to Greg Dunker, and Greg, go ahead and direct your question to Mr. Bridges.
Mr. Bridges, the governor continues to push expanded gambling as a solution for our budget problems. If he succeeds in getting another bill introduced, how will you vote on it?
First off, I wholeheartedly disagree with what the governor's choice is on that. I stand against gambling. 2 years ago, my opponent stood against gambling, but yet, I think it was House Bill 416 in the 2013 session, he voted to expand gambling, so he failed us in that way. You know, gambling is not the salvation to our economy. It is actually a detriment to it. When you look at gambling, it preys on the poor and the elderly, and that's the very people that our state's supposed to be protecting as a government official. So I disagree with gambling. I think it brings in nothing but low-paying service industry jobs, And what people don't understand is if gambling were passed and they were going to look for a casino, we would be competing with Owensboro, Hopkinsville, Bowling Green, Elizabeth. We'll be competing with all these. So our local officials are going to have to look for incentives. I'd rather take those incentives and put it in better paying jobs, industrial and manufacturing jobs.
Mr. Watkins, your response.
Thank you. Yes. No, I would absolutely not support an expansion of gaming. I wouldn't even vote to put it on the ballot. I don't think that's the answer to our economic problems, and I've told the governor that, that I would not support it. My opponent is mistaken in saying that I voted to expand gambling. We were looking at ways to fully fund the ARC, and one at the time, the possibilities were to increase the cigarette tax, to increase the sales tax by a penny, or to tax Keynote, which the Supreme Court has already ruled is legal, and they're already selling it, and to collect more money on the lottery. We opted for that. So what my vote was to tax Keno and to collect more money, more of the lottery money, to pull into the general fund to fully fund our ARC. If my opponent wouldn't have supported any of those, I suppose that we would just let the pension ARC not be funded. But that was our choices.
All right, Mr. Watkins, Mr. Bridges, thank you. We've run out of time for our media panel segment, so we are now going to move to our last segment of the forum. Each candidate will have 1 minute to make his closing remarks, and we will begin in reverse order from the opening statements with Mr. Watkins.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. I've worked hard for my first 2 years in Frankfort. I have secured $85 million in road and bridge construction money that I had to work hard for Paducah and McCracken County. While I was on the Paducah City Commission, I actively led and supported economic incentives, that money that created or and/or retained 1,100 jobs with $94 million in private investment. As your state representative, I've actively been involved in helping create or retain 922 jobs with $782 million in private investment for Paducah and McCracken County. I was instrumental. A lot of people worked hard in landing the 2+2 and. I did file a bill to lift the nuclear moratorium in Kentucky. The opposition is one businessman in eastern Kentucky who happens to have over 5,000 employees, has a lot of influence. Leadership told me file a bill that would be specific to Paducah and McCracken County, and it will pass, and that bill's in the works, and I will pre-file it for next session.
Mr. Watkins, thank you. Mr. Bridges, your closing remarks.
You know, there's been a lot said today, so I reflect on it. You know, 2 years ago, this stage was open and there was a commitment to support right to life. We were failed. There was a commitment not to raise taxes, and Mr. Watkins just talked about that bill where they did raise taxes. We were told we would work not to raise taxes. It failed. We were told that we would fight against expanding gambling just like we were told today. That vote expanded gambling. There's no way to deny that. It failed. You know, when we start looking at taxes, the way you properly fund a system is you expand the tax base through economic development. You don't raise taxes. So we need to look at the ways to raise the economic development by doing major tax reform makes it business friendly. We need to deregulate. We got overburdening government regulations on small business. And we also need to lift the nuclear moratorium, which that was a promise last time it failed, and it was the current leadership that continues to block the nuclear moratorium lift. Thank you.
Mr. Bridges, thank you. Mr. Watkins, thank you both for being here. Please exit to your left.